So I'd like to keep it going, please, for Sherwin. I'd like to invite Ellie back on stage for a little conversation. And I also do, in case you haven't noticed, have this amazing wireless microphone. So if you are feeling inspired and would like to ask a question at some point, somehow try to catch my attention and I will give you the microphone, okay? So, and do you want me to get it started? Would you like me to ask you a question at all? So first of all, I'm really curious, Sherwin, how it was, what the experience was like reading that entire sequence dissolve in one go, because obviously you didn't write it in one sitting. So what was it like to sort of just get it all out there?
Ellie started this, inaugurated this whole cloth series in Vancouver, and it was at UBC at the college, so that's what brings us down here. The intention is to read a whole book from cover to cover, and this Dissolve and Flood Song are both book-length poems, and I think oftentimes you just get a little slice of the piece, and you have to somehow carry it home and read it. But I come from an oral tradition. I come from a place where we recite long poems into the night, and we have these long stories. So I was very, the audience was so kind in terms of like offering their presence for an hour, and generous and humble to be able to sit there and absorb the poem as it's meant to be absorbed. And for me, like to read it, I mean, that I compose my work by listening to it. So I've heard my voice on the recorder on the iPhone reading back my poems to me. And I kind of feel like a new kind of logic emerges within the work. There's certainly other voices within the piece, and I think what I realized at this last reading was like there's this sort of middle voice that kind of freaked me out. So I'm reading, I'm like, who is that person? That guy is crazy, you know. So yeah, there's mystery always, and I think I'm so close to the poem that I don't really know what it feels like to be the audience and to kind of come to this in a new way. I definitely know it. I memorized it. But I think I forget sometimes that the poem is connected to a whole body, and there are parts of the body that may seem insignificant, but they are definitely part of it. And I think the poem needs to move through all those particulars to reach its final line. And I think that's the whole gesture, and that's the whole point to dissolve, is that it's not so much a poem about something, it's a poem that lives and brightens and reaches and ultimately probably doesn't reach what it's wanting to reach. So it's just that's the whole point of dissolve, is that it's trying so hard and trying to beautify itself as it's reaching, and then it fails. But in that gesture towards it, it awakens.
Thank you. And I don't have to keep asking questions, and you feel free to keep. But Ellie, so you curated this reading series, and what was your experience of hearing it, first of all? And then second of all, it would be wonderful to hear a little bit about each of your writing processes, because I feel like we have a lot of, how many of you are writers in the room? Yeah, we have a lot of writers in the room, so I'm sure that everybody will want to hear this.
Well, thank you for those questions. And Sherwin, thank you for that reading. It is a real honor to be sharing the stage with Sherwin. His work is so mesmerizing and important to me. And I really appreciate the time that you spent traveling to be with us in Vancouver and to do this reading. It's really a thrill. And Rob, there you are. Thank you for the warm welcome to Hugo House. It's an incredible space that we're in. And thank you so much to the sound technician back there. I'm so used to like bar room, terrible muddy mics, and this is just a treat, so thank you. So the Whole Cloth Reading Series in Vancouver came about because I got really frustrated with the terrible energy spikes and falls at traditional Vancouver poetry readings, where people rush in and they're all frenetic, and then there's like three or four different authors who hit you with something that's like 3 minutes long, and then they sit down and somebody else comes, and I just felt like I could never relax like honey into the words. And I wondered about when's the last time we got to be in community, which is a more and more radical act, and to just be comfortable and attentive to our bodies as we let our minds wander. So having just written a book-length poem, I was experimenting with inviting people to sit in circles with me and to read along with me as I read Trauma Head, and I just loved it, and it changed everything for me and got me talking to whomever would listen about this idea of doing a whole book or whole cloth reading series. So in antiquarian times, they used to call a whole cloth reading the entire manuscript before it was cut, so it's an uncut reading. And of course, Sherwin's work lends itself to this perfectly. It was the ideal book to start off with. And what I noticed as a listener, because I completely gave myself over to the rhythms of the images, which got me floating, I noticed that as I was relaxing into the words, I could also see that Sherwin was relaxing into the words, relaxing into the tempos. Everybody's bodies were relaxing. We were sitting in very comfortable armchairs and couches, so not this type of scenario. And we had the lights dimmed. And I am so eager to do this reading series in different parts of the world with different books, and to experience all the learning that we do just from having been there and you having read it. I think everybody was engaging with Dissolve in a different way than they had before.
Yeah, some people picked up on the sonic quality. Eventually, I think the words became sound, and I thought that was really interesting. I think for me, it allowed me to just sort of really give it life. And I felt like there was this little glimmer in the world where my poem actually lived, not as a sort of fractured thing, but as a whole. And I thought that was the most sort of beautiful thing, and I had to just constantly thank my audience, because I'm like, you know, I'm just grateful that we were able to do this here in this corner of the world. It's raining outside, maybe. We'll say it's raining, because it's raining all day. Yeah, but just generosity, and I think that's always what I wanted with Flood Song and Dissolve, is to have this, to change the shape of a room of a reading, and to have people slow down and then just absorb something. But that also seems really kind of, you know, I mean, it's a lot to ask for somebody. So if anybody wants to do it here, let me know. Anybody else?
Hi. First of all, you guys are inspiring. This is my first poetry reading I've ever gone to. I have two questions, but one is towards Ellie, but I guess sure when you can answer it too. But when you're in the thick of, I've had a lot of health issues as well, but when you're in the thick of, like, I call them episodes or whatever, do you often find yourself thinking the most clearly in what you're going to say during the episodes, or after you've had the hardest episodes and having time to reflect on them?
Well, thank you for that question. I was aware when I was dealing with this year of healing, which was just an arbitrary deadline. After a year, the neurologist didn't know what to do with me, so they said, well, you're fine. But I still had all these symptoms. But I found that I was aware of how strange I was. I was not myself, and I could tell that. I lost my sense of humor. I couldn't go into a room. I'm a very gregarious person, and I was beginning to experience panic attacks, and I was reduced. My limits were completely shifted, and I had to relearn myself. So because I knew how different I was, I was able to jot down a line here or there in a journal. Some days I could only manage two words. Some days I couldn't write at all. Some days I could write a paragraph, very spare, the way that you would quickly jot down what a dream has been like for you, just to help you remind yourself, like, oh yeah, I was having ramen with Michael Jackson. And then if you write that down, you never forget that dream. So I was almost in like Joan Didion's Year of Magical Thinking, and writing down these little dashes and dots helped me track how odd I was and how far away from myself I was. And as that journey was changing, you know, the neurologist said, okay, well, you're fine, it's been a year. And I had like literally come to the end of that journal, and I jokingly said, oh, I've written a book. And I was able to take that material and put it into the computer once I was well enough, and to start adding all the craft and the meat and the skin to it. And that part was a delight. That part was so much fun. Living the experience sucked, but playing with the words actually was so creative and silly and fun and exciting and energetic and like new to myself. And I knew that what I was writing, I was trying to get as close to provoking in the listener or the reader how weird I felt. And so nobody could argue with me about that. I had a terrific editor, Angela Rawlings, who's a sound poet in Iceland. But you know, I was the expert. And very rarely do we get the moment as artists where we are completely convinced that we are the experts and know well what we're doing. Like, that's just such a strange thing. So this whole project kind of fell into my lap. And if anything, that decisiveness carried over into the work that I'm beginning to do now, where I feel like I have a conviction about how I need to express myself, which was just as strong as the conviction that I can't talk to you anymore, I have to go lie down. So the somatic experience of having to listen to my body before it screamed at me is this something that I've imported into my artistic practice. So good luck with your healing. I'm a big believer in narrative medicine too. And just to that point, I don't mean to take up too much time here, but I knew that as I was reading from this book, like on book tour, if I always excerpted or started at the scariest point, that would be like sexy part to read, that I would be constantly re-traumatizing myself. So I gave myself a rule. As I read from this book, I always pick up on the page that I left off at, so that I experience the whole narrative cycle of healing, and I experience the whole cycle of the book, and I come to know my work better in different ways, the way that you were talking about with the whole cloth reading. And that way, too, I get to move through the text rather than get stuck.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? So I had asked a question about poetic process, and Sherwin, you mentioned a little bit about the inspiration of your last sequence that you read, which is called Hover, is that right? So could you each talk a little bit more about that process, and you know, what kind of like, what drives your compositional process, and you know, how do you, I mean, and I love that I loved your description, you know, of you know, of reaching and not quite getting there, because I feel like that is a terrific description of all writing. yeah, so can you talk a little bit more about that, please?
I essentially just listen. I essentially just absorb or just patiently sort of wait for a poem to arrive. And that's been the process for Flood Song and Dissolve. But I definitely start writing into a piece, and then eventually the piece starts revealing itself, and it begins to tell me what it wants to do. With Flood Song, I noticed like midway through, and they always start with cataclysms, right? They always start with like this moment of like shock and awe. Flood Song sort of began when I saw images of these tsunamis and these floods happening around the world, and I just it just was jarring in so many ways. And I think Katrina also happened around that time. And I was also breaking apart. And I just have a relationship with poetry. I think I don't necessarily consider it an other. I consider it a being or weather in the world, and I enter it. And I have to work with it. It can tear me apart, and it can, you know, leave me somewhere. But I just have to always have a piece of my mind that is somehow connected to this poem. So Flood Song came to me in that way, and I wrote it in while I was in Tucson. You know, and then Dissolve sort of arrived after the Tucson shootings, and I remember visiting a poetry class at Pima Community College in Tucson, and the poets, it was interesting because there are two professors there, and they were telling me, and this is a creative writing class, and these are community college students, and I was a community college student, and I remember the professor telling me, like, oh, we had this really crazy, like, student last week who was really disruptive, and, you know, we had to let him go. So the students are still dealing with the situation. And it turns out that student was Jared Loughner, who shot several people, Gabrielle Giffords and the rest, like, up the road from where I lived. And so for me, I was like thinking about language, and I think about those situations happening all together. At the same time, Obama was being reelected, and I just thought, like, what is the failure of language? I mean, people are using language in so many ways, and that really sort of started Dissolve in motion. And eventually that narrative fell away, and then something else emerged, and I think the weight of trying to name place and name myself and trying to sort of create a poem that sort of was borderless, you know, where one could enter other states of being, where there were states of imagination or states of duress or states of, you know, political states. I mean, there are all of these states that I wanted to sort of bleed and move through using language to do that. So it's a meditative process, and I think I learn from my poems how to be in a moment, and they teach me something about the present, and I don't want to see it. That's the whole thing, is I don't want to be where my poems are, but they somehow give me the language to be there with it. So it's that kind of relationship that I have with my poems. It's always been that way.
That is a totally fascinating answer. Glad this is recorded. I have a different experience. I didn't write my first poem until I was 38. And my first book, Serpentine Loop, is all about ice. And for that series of poems, I used a word related to ice in every single poem. So that sort of practical tool was really helpful for me in terms of generating and torquing ideas. This book, I just explained how it sort of fell down out of the heavens into my head and onto the page. And I think my writing life is changing every moment as I am changing. I'm a big Borges fan, and I believe that you can never read the same book twice, and I believe that you can never write the same word twice. Right now I'm in a crazy productive, obsessive stream of investigation and reading and writing where I can barely stand to be away from my work. It's a very sparkly place right now. And I hope that it lasts longer, but I also know that it's really special and really unexpected. And I know that the next few projects are going to have all their own flavors and all their own demands and all their own attentions. So I'm just hoping to stay curious, and I'm hoping to stay open to whatever it is.
And I think when I was in Vancouver, AWP in 2005, I was losing my mind. I had Alice anxiety. I was like, and then I just remember everybody like saying, "Are you okay?" I'm like, I'm kind of going crazy. And
do you like Vancouver more now?
Maybe a little bit more, yeah. But I just remember having these things that were happening to me. Like at one point I was on a panel and my necklace broke, And I just thought, wow, that's a real, you know, something that's telling me something. And the beautiful part is, like, I have this old, like, silver Navajo necklace that I always used to wear. And the Native women, elder women that I was on the panel with all came and they picked up the beads and they gave it back to me. And I just felt like, okay, what's going on here? So that madness in Vancouver sparked Flood Song. So it was interesting to go back and read the book that came after in that town. It's so crazy.
I was at that AWP and I think I felt a similar madness. cool. So, okay, great. We have a question.
Talk about how mad and crazy we are.
Thank you both for reading. It was amazing. And the discussion. Quick question, it's kind of related to all the other questions, and that's regarding the completion of works, the completion of longer works, and the intention of creating a book or a longer string of sequences with multiple parts. Mm. And I'm curious if you can talk or discuss a little bit about your relationship to it as the project is completed and as it gets further removed from your present. With regards also to this idea you mentioned, Ali, the ritual of reading at certain places and it's across time as you perform it. Or even, I was reminded through the indigenous kind of, or native oral tradition in those cultures. So how do you go back? This trauma head is quite new, but the older works, what is your relationship to those? How do they inform your present? Is, I guess, what I'm getting at.
Well, I'll take a stab at part of that question, which maybe this isn't even the question you asked, so please guide me. I find that I can have a manuscript, and I'm like, oh, it feels complete, it's robust, I touched on everything I need to touch on, and then the minute it goes into InDesign or into page layout, I'm like, oh, who are you? You look different to me. And that's when, for me, a lot of my interest in typography and graphic layout comes into play. So my publisher, Anvil Press, knows to brace themselves for, like, many back and forths with the galleys, because I will start recognizing, like in Trauma Head, I have etiological footnotes at the bottom of some of the pages. I didn't know I was going to do that until I saw the manuscript laid out, and I recognized that, oh, I need to have an aspect in here that mimics the lab reports that I was getting. So I ran chunks of the manuscript through a word count, and I then tallied up certain, like, how many times the word breath was said, so that now the reader can do diagnostics on the text. And I could sort of clock in with, how am I doing through this poem? So that for me, there are a lot of layers that come to the book only when it starts to look more like a book.
With me, I think I it's all about deduction. It's all about removing the excess. And I really am looking at the line, and I want every line to do something. At some point, it becomes about tone. It becomes about what I can do with this work and what kind of tone am I working towards. What's happening? I mean, how am I matching syntax to form? How am I pushing with every page? How is it leading to the next page? And how is it reaching a kind of resonance? You know, how is it kind of reaching a kind of tone? And level of, like, how's it pulsing? That's definitely part of it. There's so many layers. I mean, it's like, I mean, Dissolve, I think, is a very layered piece, and it's supposed to be a film. It's supposed to be a installation. It's supposed to be a song. It's supposed to be thought. And all of those iterations, or all of those things that it's supposed to be, inform what the work is doing. So they often lead me into, like, these existential moments, you know. And I think I have to be strong enough to go there. But also I have to be surprised by the work. If I'm not surprised, you're not surprised. So at every turn, I think it's always like I have this little trickster sort of in me somewhere, and it's always like, keep pushing. You know? That's too, like, you're putting a bow on that, let's push further. So that's always happening with the work, just pushing. The language as far as I can, the images as far as I can. And with Dissolve, it was that. It was like, let's push it completely to the edge. And if it gets into some others, what was I saying earlier? Like, if I can push language to its most, if I can feel that sort of stretch outward and still maintain the integrity of the work, then that's the work. And I don't care about, like, whether, I don't care about any of the sort of careerist sort of, like, is this going to be a book that's received by the National Book Award or whatever, you know, that wasn't a part of it, but it's just like, how far can I push this, because I have the power to do that.
And so, will Hover be also a book length sequence?
No, Hover is like, I mean, the new poems, and I didn't read them, but they're like these little photographs. They're like, I mean, they're doing this other, I feel like they're like tarot cards or like something. They're just, and they're more memoir in a sense. I'm trying to do this thing where like I can go back into my memory and try to locate particular poetic moments and try to remain close to that experience. So that's been a new project. Rather than imagining or rather than being summoned by this thing, I want to go back into where I was raised, because I come from a culture in a different space. I was a shepherd when I was a kid, and I used to, or even an adult, I have a very specific experience, and I want to give that to myself and the world. I feel like at this point I'm kind of middle aged now, so there's a tendency for me to want to just share that particular experience with the world. Which is really interesting, because they feel like little mini like sort of memoirs or glimpses. They feel like, you know, my grandfather is very present in those pieces. And I used to ride horses a lot when I was a kid, so there's a lot of poems about getting bucked off of horses. You know? I have this scar on my arm where, like, it's right here. But it's a really nasty scar. And that's kind of what the Indian Health Service does to you when you break your arm. So that's the military hospitals, I guess. So yeah, I think I grew up with horses. I grew up on a big land. Many of the experiences here, it was such a valuable, open, beautiful experience. And I'm kind of seeing that world transform. And I think particular generation of Navajo elders are passing, and they're in their 90s now, and I really have this sense of sadness, because that was my community when I was growing up. They lived in a world that was completely their own, a different world. They only spoke Navajo, and they believed in what the world gave them, and I think I want to pay homage to that, or not even that, I just want to share that with the world.
Yeah. Do we have any other questions?
No softballs? Really?
What are you waiting for?
Your description of the outside world is so beautiful, and I absolutely love it. Like, I'm inspired by the question of, like, where do you guys, like, what's your favorite place to, like, write? For some reason, I imagine you, like, next to a window where it's, like, you have, like, this natural light coming in. I'm like, I don't know. Probably.
My first poem was written looking out a window. The first poem I ever wrote. And I don't know why poetry was the medium. Like, I don't know why I was, like, on the keyboard typing lines. I have no, like, reason to do that. And I was looking out a window, and there was a beautiful, the mesa behind my house turned beautiful salmon pink, and I remember my mother making tortillas in the kitchen. So I remember that particular moment. I was like, click, 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 click. There's a little line that emerged on the blank page. But otherwise, they take place anywhere at any moment. And right now I'm thinking about my current poem. So I'm always in a poem. Just when it happens.
I write on my couch. I can write anywhere now. I started writing on airplanes, which I never thought that I could, but I'm like, fuck it, I'm so uncomfortable anyway, I might as well open my computer and try to get some work done. So that's turned out to be a really good constraint. And I know that there are people who say stay mobile, like try to take a pen and write so you don't get hooked on your computer, you don't get hooked into like only writing in Garamond or whatever your trick is. But frankly, that doesn't seem to matter to me as much as having enough quiet space. So I can do that now with certain, I put on like Icelandic music that I can't understand the words. And as long as I've got that music going, it like tricks my brain and it's like Pavlov's bell and I just start going.
I think Dissolve soundtrack is gonna be like Disintegration and Unknown Pleasures by Joy Division. You can probably put the in the background of that. Because I just was like, that's the only sort of beat I can listen to. So I and then Slayer, South of Heaven, I think those are the gods of Dissolve. Dissolve is my rock album.
Yeah. Amazing. Any other questions? Okay, so I think, oh yeah.
I think I just want to shout out to IIA here. There's some poets here who went through the MFA program and doing incredible work. So I just want to share their presence in this room. And Ellie's a student at IIA also, the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, where I'm very, it's a very good place.
And also thank you to Jennifer Novak Kane for not only bringing me into contact and conversation with you, Sherwin, but also to putting us into touch. So thank you, Joan. Thanks for everybody being here.
Okay, thank you for coming. Another round of applause for Sherwin and Harry. And they will be continuing this conversation out in our salon.
We are selling books courtesy of our book selling partners, Open Books. Thank you all for coming.